You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes after 10. You know, on Thursdays and Fridays, we love to have a bit of fun or to ask some serious questions in relation to art, pop culture, entertainment. And we've had some fantastic shows in that vein, thanks to producer Mohau over the last 4 or 5 months of the show that I've been on. And today is one of those where, you know, this is a really serious and interesting issue at the same time. When it comes to entertainment, it could be theater, it could be literature. In some ways, we touched on it obliquely yesterday with Karabo Holeng when we talked about the escapist nature of certain forms of writing. And it raises the question, what do you want as a viewer? What do you want as a theater goer? What do you want as a cinema goer? What do you want from the songs that you listen to, that you dance to in a club? And of course, in this country, we love our soapies dearly. We watched them for many, many years. I used to be an Isidingo fan. I haven't watched it a lot. I'm sure if I watch 3 episodes, I'll be back on track again with it. But there has been a scene in Isidingo that has caused a lot of controversy. And a lot of people were upset when they watched it. Sometimes audio can be more upsetting because, I don't know, there's something about voice and audio that is particularly, I think, potent. So be warned. This is a scene in which one of the characters, Sechaba, finds himself wanting to visit a grave of his dad that is located on a farm, and then gets confronted by two farmers. And it is a scene that involves racial prejudice, and that is what a lot of people viewed. And it has resulted in so much online debate and discussion. I'm going to read you some of the tweets it solicited. And then I'm also joined in studio. I'll introduce her in a second by Tandi Smith, who is head of policy at Media Monitoring Africa, one of my favorite institutions in this country. But in case you didn't watch it, if you did watch it, you don't want to hear it again, just switch off for 2 minutes. But if you want full context so that you can participate in this very heated discussion about what do you want from your scripts in soapies, in storylines, then we're going to play you this clip in the next couple of seconds. Danao, how did you react, by the way, when you listened to this clip for the first time?
Okay, I've got mixed emotions with when it comes to clip. And like you say, with script writers incorporating real life events, you know, in soapies and whatnot, I particularly found it disgusting.
Really?
Okay. I found it a bit offensive, but
so just on, but I mean, just on an emotional level, not even like being cerebral.
I was angered.
Is it
by what I saw? Yes, especially in connection with what happened to the guy who was forced into a coffin. So it's something along those lines. It struck a nerve with me. But
Well, let's play it and let's see how it plays out. I assume the scriptwriters were deliberately alluding to that news event. Yeah. Okay, so here is this particular clip from Isidingo. Have a listen.
Trespassing, boy. Have you come to steal stuff?
What? Huh? Huh? Wait. Me?
Well, I don't see any other baboons here. Do you?
Huh? What? But don't call me that. Don't call me Babu.
Huh?
I'm telling them. You see, I just came here, man, to visit my father's grave. That's it. So please, man.
Listen here. This is Laru and Struben property. Who gave you permission to bury your father here?
My father's been buried here for years, Papa.
Well, then I'm going to make you dig him up with your hands.
What?
Is that what you want, huh?
I was going to wait. Hey. Stop it. Don't call me Baboon doing funny things here, okay? I don't know you. Do you know me? So please, I've been living here for a very long time. I grew up here, my man.
Really? Yeah, he said he grew up in the area, huh?
Yeah.
Tell me, huh? Let me tell you, your parents are probably very good, hardworking farm workers, huh? And you? What have you become? A BEE baboon living on bloody corruption.
Don't call me baboon. Huh? Don't call me baboon.
Oh, what?
Huh? What? Don't call me baboon. Can I chief? Don't call me baboon. Can I chief, mama?
Hey!
Did I do it?
Didn't he? Slim.
Yeah, I asked him.
Yeah, yeah, kijk. Klein Bobby Jankie asempies. Nee. Jy kan nie 'n patroon op 'n mors nie.
Wat dan?
Begrawe.
Lewendig?
Ja, ons is mos nice.
Grawe. Lewendig.
Jeez, that's hectic. And if your Afrikaans let you down there, obviously you can't hear subtitles. The one dude says to the other one, bury him. To which he responds, alive. And he says, yes, alive. So that's the final part of that horrific scene. If you watched it, what came up for you? If you listen to it now for the first time, what comes up for you? I must say the emotions that come up for me I agree with you, Dino. I totally do. I don't want to accuse of crying for the sake of ratings, but it is an horrific scene. Tani, before we get analytic, what do you feel when you hear that? Or the first time you did? I think you've seen it before. Oh.
I didn't actually watch the episode myself, so it was the first time that I actually heard the audio. It's upsetting. It is. I think that it does touch on a lot of sensitive feelings.
Okay, we're going to unpack that in a second. Also joining us is Carol Motlala, who is a lawyer for human rights and also member of the Press Council. Carol, thank you so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you so much, Eusebius, for having me, and good morning to your 702 listeners.
Carol, we're first doing feelings. What comes up for you when you hear that audio?
I actually watched it, so this is my second time actually hearing it. It's upsetting. It's upsetting, but it's also, for me, quite necessary. I watched it with my kids, a 10-year-old and a 4-year-old, and it actually started a conversation in my household. So, yeah, it is something that was, it came up as a shock, seeing it, but because also I've heard of cases that are similar of that, it was also for me a great opportunity to actually discuss race relations with my kids, you know, as to why is it such a bad thing, you know, especially our young ones don't usually understand it when we say that there's a terrible history that goes this way and is still affecting us today. I honestly feel like my kids are cushioned, and the scene actually gave me an opportunity as a parent to discuss such matters with them.
Well, I think that's a beautiful, productive way of looking at it, Carol. Tandi, you seem to be nodding also positively in agreement with what Carol is saying. And I mean, from a media monitoring point of view, both you and Carol obviously care a lot for, you know, what we do in the media. We've got such power that we wield. We don't often think about it. And we have codes of conduct. We have laws in this country. But the gray area of obviously are around ethical questions, having regard for things where legal questions and codes of conduct are not even appropriate. Do you think that in this particular occasion, the producers were firmly within the acceptable bounds from an ethical consideration in terms of thinking about script writing and audience?
You know, I think that as difficult as the scene is, or, you know, as many questions as it raises, I think that it is important to have this kind of content on our screens, especially from a edutainment perspective. I think, ethically, ethics are a very interesting and very grey area of discussion. But having said that, within, you know, legal bounds or codes of conduct, yes, they even after listening to it, they were within their confines of those.
Carol, there are, of course, multiple things one has to take into account, right? We had the most beautiful, difficult conversation yesterday with philosopher Jacques Rousseau about the use of analogies like rape analogies. And there are multiple audiences that consume our work as media practitioners, as filmmakers, as script writers. The producers will be happy that Mom Carol was provoked to have a necessary conversation with her little one about the country that we live in. But then, of course, there are some people who may be actual victims of the kind of violence that the scene depicts. For them, it will trigger trauma and secondary trauma. For them, it is not a learning moment.
You see, yes, let me first deal with this, that Isidingo is quite known for this. Isidingo is one of the first drama series to bring us mixed relations, where we see, for the first time on the screen, we saw a white guy going out with a black woman. Isidingo is one of the first shows to actually bring to us the reality of HIV/AIDS, if you remember then, the Nandi Pasin.
Yes,
you know, so
yes.
This is not new to Isidingo.
Hmm.
They're actually quite known to this. But I honestly, we also have to accept that it's quite a sensitive issue. It touches to some people the core of their trauma, and it might have awakened certain emotions.
Mm.
Perhaps the producers could have considered the caution, you know, that little byline that today there would be a scene that will be quite sensitive. So just to alert those sensitive viewers. But that in no way suggests that the scene should not be there.
Mm.
I think it is necessary. And the way it played out for us, actually, when we came back to the office, we have the friends of the courts in a similar case in Mpumalanga, where the farm owners did the same to one of a guy that they were accusing of stealing cable or something. And it brought us to say, how do we then discuss this issue going forward? You know, how do we further support people that are in these instances? Because many of them go so unheard. When we go to different areas, Upington, Eusebius, we must take a drive there. The cases that we get from farm workers.
No, I hear you. I totally hear you. And it's an interesting mix of responses from the viewers. Not everyone liked it, but many people share your view. Bridget, for example, Tandi, says here on Twitter something interesting. She says, wow, Eusebius, I love that scene. After years of playing Rainbow Nation in our writing, finally some truth in the script writing. We are starting to confront South African realities. And that's a fascinating viewpoint, isn't it?
Yeah, that is really interesting, but I think it's entirely accurate. And, you know, I think that, as I was saying earlier, infotainment has a responsibility to reflect what's going on in society. And I think far too often we are too cautious to start raising these debates. And I think, you know, we find ourselves at a time where race is a very sensitive topic for a lot of people, but it is something that has come up and is being discussed more and more. And I think that it's great that these debates are happening, whether, you know, sensitive or upsetting or not. It's something that does need to happen.
Okay, let's go to the lines and see what our listeners made of it, and viewers, those who are familiar with the show as well. And I think Carol also makes a very important point. There's a general discussion to be had here, but there's also a familiarity with the product. If you are a viewer of Isidingo, you're used to it. I mean, you know, that interracial couple that Carol is talking about. Yeah, I still you know, love those, that particular moment in the storyline. King, good morning.
Good morning. Service. Yes, I'm calling from Pretoria. I think the show was despicable. I think the timing is incorrect. The fact that it's shown at prime time, 7 o'clock in the evening, with all the children and everyone sitting around the television, is uncalled for. We remember a little incident a little while ago where a certain estate agent was rushed to court and fined, I don't know, thousands for mentioning similar words, not as harsh words, actually. And here it comes on primetime TV, referring to people as baboons, beating them up. What's going to happen to this ABC? Surely if there's a precedent set, if you call somebody else of another race a monkey or a baboon, it's derogatory and there's court cases. And yet the SABC can do this on television. I think it's absolutely despicable. I think furthermore, I think all they're trying to do is further the divide in our race that the president is currently trying to do by calling the race card and blaming all the evils and the wrongs and the goings-ons of the ANC at the moment on race divide. So I think maybe this script was actually written by his people, seeing it's SABC. I just think it's utterly despicable.
Ken, can I ask you a question in turn?
Yes.
When is it best to talk about people being called baboons? At 2 o'clock in the morning rather than at 7 p.m.?
You shouldn't talk about it at all. It's despicable. shouldn't be discussed on television.
But it happens. It happens. I mean, you want a Rainbow Nation facade in script writing that doesn't reflect the world we live in. Carol travels to Upington. She tells us that as a lawyer, she deals with cases that are featured in this script. You say don't show it on TV. Is it too uncomfortable for you because you'd rather we play at 7 p.m. Scenes of the 1995 Rugby World Cup?
No, I think it's despicable that they show that scene at all.
Yeah, but you said it's despicable 10 times. You've yet to justify exactly why you hold the view.
Because I don't say that. I haven't come across that. We all speak from our own view. She's a lawyer, and she goes around to these things. What about all the other people being beaten up and raped and the child molestation and stuff? You don't see that. You don't see child molestation on TV, and you're telling me that's a reality of life. How would you like to see child pornography at 7 o'clock in the evening? Because that's the reality. Speak to the social workers. They face that daily. But it doesn't mean to say you can broadcast it on TV.
Tandi,
have
your jaw...
Have a show like you're having now. Have a show like you're having now and let the people discuss it.
Tandi, your jaw's on the floor here in the studio. What do you want to say to Ken?
No, I think that, yes, it's great that we're having this discussion, but you cannot compare this to content of child pornography and child molestation. That is illegal content to show. That is completely not on the same level as this. Race issues and the kind of scene that we saw is a reality for so many people. And that isn't illegal content. That's stuff that gets that people face on a day-to-day basis. And you can't draw a comparison between child pornography and issues of race and violence.
Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Jennifer. How do you react to that clip?
I'm disgusted. Okay, I put a big post on Facebook yesterday.
Mm.
You know, as a 50-year-old lady that wants to embrace the Rainbow Nation, and I have many work colleagues, people in my church that are black, colored, white, Indian, I fail to understand where the directors of Isi Dingo, how did they just bring this script in? You go from a Lincoln Sabeco, Nina Zamdela breaking out of jail, all of a sudden they take this little plot where Sataba gets a letter and he ends up at the graveyard. And for me, as a white woman, it sends out a very bad message to everyone because I just feel, are they trying to make white people feel like they're above everyone else? I'm saying prick yourself, Eusebius.
Yeah.
Prick me, prick Tandi. All our blood flows red. How do we expect our children to grow up in a rainbow so-called nation when we're still posting rubbish like this? And I have got so many comments to my post on Facebook where people are standing in agreement with me. And I've said there, if you stand in agreement with me, phone Eusebius on the open line, boycott Isi Dingo. I refuse to actually watch Isi Dingo no more. I think in this day and age, there's so much more things that they could be put in on the TV than this nonsense. And then a day before Freedom Day, and I was flabbergasted. I said to my mother, Freedom Day's tomorrow, you know, how do you link the two together? I don't know if Isi Dingo directorship took drugs the night before or what, but they lost the plot and they're going to lose a lot of viewership over this.
I don't think they will, Jennifer. You see, here's the interesting thing, though. Well, you can't assert things are wrong. You're going to have to make the case for it, I'm afraid, even when you call Eusebius' open line. He's going to hold you accountable. You can't just say it's disgusting like the previous one. It's wrong. Now, let's have the debate. If you want to be a good white who is helping to live in a country where people get along, where there's justice, where you have a reduction in the number of black farmers, black farm workers who are maltreated, there's a case in the news cycle exactly like this. Carol, as a lawyer, is a friend of the court in a similar case in one of the northern provinces. If you want to live in a rainbow nation, Jennifer, it starts with confronting the status quo. And the status quo is not classic FM listening to Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. It is talking about reality.
But why do they always have to put it on? Yes, I hear you, Sebius, but why do they always have to put on the TV the white antagonizing the black? Why?
I want to ask you an interesting question there. You know, here's a scene with two particular white men. You are a white viewer watching that scene. Automatically, you feel as if that scene is speaking to you in relation to your white skin. Why do you, as Jennifer, not divorce yourself as an individual white person, recognizing that there is a scene about two particular white characters in that particular part of the script? Isn't it interesting that you see that as a commentary on white people?
It is, because it's shown such a lot on TV. And the worst thing is that the young boy didn't actually want to do it. He was forced by his father, which goes to show you that it's It needs to stop. What are parents teaching their children? Because the son still questions the father, and he's like, "Nee, pa, ons kan nie," and he's like, "Bury him alive," you know? And, well, I hear what you're saying. I hear what Tandi said. But my personal view is I think it was just very, very disgusting. And me, for one, I'm not going to watch Isidingo no more.
Errol, I have to be honest with you. That's what I get paid to do. I don't know what is more upsetting and perplexing this morning. The scene and the emotion that it triggers, or the complete and utter denial of the two first white callers who call in, who want to see butterflies in a field of daisies at 7 o'clock.
That's my problem exactly, you see, this, you know. It's like, what is the role of the media if it's not to offend us, to you know, so that we can test our own beliefs, our own take on certain matters? Like, for us to be in such complete denial, it's a complete reflection of our country, you know. If another white person would not say, you know, that scene actually makes me even more angrier at the real scene that had taken place, is a problem. To say I don't want to see it altogether because it doesn't reflect my current beliefs is just actually moving away from this whole issue. And for me to also, for these two callers to actually ignore the storyline of Isidingo. It's okay for Bradley to say that she's pissed that Khutalo is now overtaking his role at Haines International with the help of Nikiwe, and he's a white man that, with all this privilege, is thinking of moving to Australia. That storyline is okay. You know?
Yeah, no, I'm afraid I just do not say. Adelaide in Randburg, what do you make of it?
Hi, Eusebius, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Mixed emotions, triggered by the scene, but also triggered by people's desire for Rainbow Nation bliss.
It's, you know, it's sad. It's just the two previous white callers, it's really sad. That this is the reality that is happening in South Africa. For them not to want to acknowledge and accept the reality, but pretend that everything is fine. It's really sad. This is what is up. Carol has said that this is what, these are cases that they're dealing with every day. This is when you put yourself in other people's shoes and see what we black people deal with, have been dealing with. Now, for them to say it's disgusting during prime time. So when is the correct time to play the scene? Is it around 12 at midnight? This is the conversation that me as a parent to an 8-year-old who goes to a school, a mixed school, to a conversation to say, yes, my child, you know the bad things that happened in the past. This is what we're talking about. Unfortunately, my love, these things are happening. So this scene was just right on point. And in the previous call, the lady said, right before Freedom Day. Yeah, unfortunately, my white friend, yes, it's before Freedom Day. There are people, but unfortunately, in other parts, there are dead people who are going through these things right before Freedom Day, after Freedom Day, and next year, and the year after that. And these are things that we have to deal with. So this scene was just impeccable. It was right on time. So for people to call in and say, because it makes them feel uncomfortable, and it was disgusting, and I'm no longer going to watch Isidingo because of that, that's really sad.
Yeah, we continue this conversation now. There's millions of your calls. We'll take as many as we can. Carol, are you still good to stay with us? I'm enjoying your insights. Tandia, you okay?
Yes, thanks.
Yeah. 25 minutes before 11, we're having a heated debate about a scene in Isidingo that shows two white farmers harassing a black man who is visiting the grave of his dad. And, you know, eventually having a conversation about whether they should bury him alive. Some people find it disgusting, despicable. Other people think that it is reality. And then others have odd views saying it is reality, but not at 7 o'clock at night. Apparently, there's a good time to talk about racism, not at 7 p.m. And I am just, I'm feeling emotional about all of it. The scene is triggering. If you understand and have experienced prejudice, it is horrible. It angers you. It's upsetting. But I'm also equally upset by people who want to reinforce Rainbow Nation myth-making because it soothes you to not have to deal with reality in this country. Let's go to Connie in Sudan. What do you make of it, Connie?
Hi, you see this. I didn't watch the episode, but listening to it now, it did trigger some emotions. But I must say, these are good emotions for me because it says to me, let's engage, right? Because these are the realities that black people go through. And the issue is that white people don't really want to go there. You know, we have our kids playing on the rugby field. They are called kafirs. And when you try and address it, it's like, oh, you know, it happened in that sphere of the moment. So you kind of have to move away from it. So these are the realities, and we need to see them. 7 o'clock, it's the right time where our kids, my 16-year-old son, can be in front of the TV and see, and then we engage, and we say, how do you deal with it?
Yeah.
How do you educate your wife's friends when they use a language that makes you so uncomfortable, that belittles you when somebody calls you a kefir? So, you see, I don't understand why would people be so upset? Why would these two callers go on top of the roof and say it shouldn't be shown and they're not going to watch
100%. Particularly the weird, especially that first caller who's like, not at 7 o'clock. So he doesn't have a problem with the reality being shown, but apparently not at 7. Now imagine, Connie, we could live in a world where you as a woman can say, Eusebius, I would prefer to have my gender discrimination at 8:05. Please, not at 12. And I can go to Mahal and say, Mahal, I know you're homophobic, not at 1 o'clock. I only do homophobia between 12:30 and 12:45. I mean, please, when is a good time to talk about discrimination when there's no good time to be discriminated against?
Exactly. And, you know, even homophobia, it happens right here. The kids in school, they talk about gay people as if they're talking about something very disgusting. And when you try and engage those kids, you find parents very defensive because they don't want to go there. So we need to have these platforms. We need to educate our kids. We want to have this rainbow nation that we're claiming we want to have. We need to be able to sit with the uncomfortable issues and talk about uncomfortable stories and say, how do we deal with it? I mean, yesterday when I went to that debate, I heard this woman saying, oh, you know, white people are scared to speak in spaces like this. They're scared because when they make a mistake, they are attacked. It's saying victim mentality, because the reality is that the power dynamics have created this whole situation where our kids are being victimized. Our parents are being victimized. All, you know, people in the rural areas are being victimized, and they're victimized silently. They can't say much.
Absolutely.
Why? Because we sit and say, at least I have a job.
Absolutely. Sorry, Mahal, I had to use the prop there. You were the first male that were in my eyesight. The other one was Dr. Shungai. I mean, I can't do that to him. Lee, hello.
Hello, morning. Are you talking to Lee?
I'm talking to Lee. Thanks for your patience, Lee. What are your reflections?
No, I want to ask you a question. Do you believe that one can plan a future without resolving the past?
I suspect not, Lee. What do you think?
I am so sad about what's happened to our country and to the people. I can't tell you. It's a terrible sadness.
Thank you, Lee. Thanks for that. Ranelle, where? Hello.
Hi, Eusebius. After hearing the clip, I was reminded by, I think, another clip that you played from The Roots. And it just triggered me so much. It got me so angered. And I want to know, you know, black people, we have these discussions, but what's the point if we're having them amongst ourselves? White people refuse to watch and acknowledge the lived experiences of black people. What then is the point? Do white people go and watch Kalushi? Do they go and watch The Roots? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I'm just so angered that, you know, after this, it's just black people, they're going to be talking about racism amongst themselves, where white people want to play, you know, oblivious to it and pretend as if it doesn't exist.
Well, I mean, a couple of people are saying, listen, those two white callers you had on, please don't make it seem as if they're talking about us. That's also important, eh, Tandi, because we don't want to essentialize these things.
We don't want to, but
Tandi, you look like a white person.
She is.
That appears to be correct.
It appears to be the case, right? Those callers, I suspect, were not speaking for you.
No, not at all, but I do.
And not only because you called Tandi.
I do, unfortunately, think that that is, you know, the reflection of a vast majority of white people. I think that, you know, it's as much as it's not wholly reflective, it is the reality. And, you know, the question or the statement around, well, how do we, black people can't just have the issue about the discussion around race within themselves, but it needs to be a cross-racial discussion. And that is why the media's role is so important in this. And that is why we can't not have this content appearing on our screens, because in just in that, with shows that target a multiracial audience, that is the perfect opportunity to then air this kind of content and raise these issues.
Carol, I had no idea how you know, listeners were going to respond to the clip. We are about 40 minutes into the conversation. Are you surprised by some of the some of what you've heard? How are you feeling at this point?
Not really, not really. We do know that some of our white colleagues, friends, neighbors have a particular perspective, and I'm actually glad that the two callers called in, because for us to also pretend that they are there but we don't want to hear them is that we are playing the same game as theirs. It's good that they actually voiced out their consent, and we could at some point, I'm actually glad at how you responded to them, you know, where we could actually ask them particular questions to get a sense, because silencing them is not going to change their perspective.
Absolutely. Elizabeth, good morning and welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there, Elizabeth. What do you make of that scene? Should it have been shown?
I think it should have been shown. I think it's absolutely revolting, but I think it should be shown. My only beef is that there should have been a caution, because I think if someone is a victim of such a crime, it is going to, I mean, you know, you're sitting there peeling potatoes happily in your own home and, you know, suddenly this comes. But from a more personal angle, I'm irritated with myself because I'm not now going to... I hate soapies. I cannot stand them. Hmm. And now I'm going to watch the bloody thing because I want to know what's going to happen. yeah, unless someone... Can someone just tell me what's going to happen and then I don't have to watch it? But, yeah, I much prefer the criminal stuff, like, you know, like Law and Order, and I wish we would write more plot-driven novel things in South Africa, because I think there you can deal with the issues far more comprehensively than some stupid soapy who's using it as an angle to hook people in. I'm going to be shot for saying this.
No, you won't be shot for it. There's no monopoly on truth here, Elizabeth. We all have views, and we have to learn to live with the fact that we have different takes on it. I like things that are jarring because reality is jarring. And, you know, I was a big fan of Law & Order, but you can watch Law & Order with popcorn and be unmoved by it because there's a beautiful detached plot, and it is lovely executed. It is great production. It is good TV. But jarring emotions, when they reflect a jarring, scarring world, are also important.
Jarring emotions that get me, that's fine. And I've seen some pretty jarring stuff in Law & Order with, well, it's jarred me, I don't know about. But what I don't like is the way a soapy runs, the whole way I don't like soapies. And the fact that they have this, I felt it could be dealt with in a more comprehensive manner in a criminal, in a criminal or, you know, some, you know, a more, yeah, than some soapy that's into ratings.
Okay, interesting. Howard Tembowski on the line. Always love it when you call in, Howard. What are your thoughts as you're listening to this one?
Well, Eusebius, I must be very honest with you. When I first heard this coming over the radio, I thought it was cell phone footage that someone had recorded. So these people who are entering into this denialist attitude of, well, these things are not happening, we have a rainbow nation, and this kind of thing shouldn't be discussed, is absolute nonsense. These same people will sit and watch things like Criminal Minds, where you see blood and guts all over the place, and that's okay. But it's not okay to discuss these kind of issues. But for them to then additionally come and talk on behalf of white people is absolutely disgusting. I don't know who gave them that mandate in the first place. They do not speak on behalf of me. And quite frankly, this kind of thing is happening. But to assume that all white people are racist is also nonsense. And we've really got to have this discussion up front in proper public forums.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let's push that for just 30 seconds, Howard, if I may. We've got lots of callers. Sure. But there's an important moment here about white people. Not enough white people say, not in my name. I can tell you now, The station manager of 702 and of Cape Talk is going to get to their desk in the next hour. They're going to be fronted by 10,000 angry white people listening to this conversation. Howard Tembowski is not going to say, I'm writing to you on the comment line, not in my name. Tandi Smith is not going to do that. Too many white people who do not share the view of the first two callers are silent in this country. And that is why you have companies who think that the three who troll them on Twitter, on their comment line, on their Facebook pages, speak for all white people. Too many white people who have different views quietly go about their business while others are speaking on your behalf.
Absolutely, and it's completely unacceptable. You know what, whiteies, do me a favor, grow some cojones and actually start up and stand up and say, not in my name.
Absolutely. Thank you, Howard. Thank you so much for that. Let's take a break.
Eusebius is on Twitter, at Eusebius.
Carol, I mean, it raises a question. If we've got so many different viewpoints, so many different sensibilities, what is the media to do? And I'm talking here media broadly construed, from scriptwriters, television producers, radio talk show hosts. Who are you producing content for when we live in a country where people have such deeply incompatible desires for content?
The media, what I have a question back to your question, Eusebius, I'm sorry. What's then the purpose of the media if it's not to strike a conversation? Why are we in this game if we are not to actually strike a conversation, you know, to actually have a robust debate about particular issues? What is then the role of the media?
No, it's a very good question. Very good question. Tandi, we were just talking a little about some of these issues. What are some of the thoughts for you around this?
You know, I think that there are sometimes cases where media don't get it right with giving, you know, relevant space for diversity of voices to come through. I think that we often do focus on the negative and focus on the angered comments and the, you know, the denialists, because that then has the basis for discussion. But we don't often get past that. We don't. We far too often don't create the space for interactive dialogue, and I think that is something that we need to try move and we'll work on.
Absolutely. Kafilwe, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius.
Hi, Kafilwe. Welcome to the conversation. Yes, okay. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to say I grew up in the Northwest, and back then we had this pseudo freedom because we were called to Botswana, and largely we lived side by side with our white neighbors, and we didn't really care much for each other because, you know, we had land firstly. So if you wanted a piece of land, you went to the chief and you got it from the chief. And we had white farmers. Now, there was a time in my life where we were evicted from the home that we lived in the township, and we had to go and live in the village. And I must say that was a very scary time for me personally, because there were rumors of this white farmer that if he caught you near his field, you didn't even have to be on his field, because people used to pick the sunflower seeds off the sunflowers, that he would find you and he would get your tea. So, you know, it was always like running the gauntlet, running from your home to the road where you would catch the taxi to school, because you were scared of this white farmer who would find you and he would tear out your teeth. And for me, Eusebius, I don't watch Eusebius Bingo, but hearing that clip just brought I was so sad, you know, because at the moment in the Northwest, in Kaluni, there's a 12-year-old boy who said, nobody knows who killed him, you know. And I'm just so sad, you know. You've got people who are burning white people's houses, and they're just, to me, we haven't healed. We haven't healed, because I can tell you now that the story that's playing out in those black homes is that a white farmer caught this boy and he beat him to a pulp. And the story that we're going to hear in the media is probably that, no, he put him on the back of the van because he was stealing and he was taking him to the police, and then he fell out. You know, I just feel as though, like, as a nation, we haven't healed. And I don't know if it's Bingo's place to bring up the conversation, and I don't know after they've brought up the conversation if we will heal. But I just want to tell the people out there that think that we are living in this fantastic new society, that we're really not. Like,
absolutely. Very well put, Kafilwe. Let's go to Krugersdorp. Tony, welcome to the conversation.
Thanks very much for the opportunity to see this. I'd just like to give a slightly different perspective. When it's, I haven't seen that, but I heard it on your clip now that you played. And as a white person, I mean, I can't speak for other white people, but for myself, I feel absolutely no guilt listening to that whatsoever. And I'll tell you why. I mean, if I was confronted with such a situation, I would feel absolutely nothing if I had to beat to death those two white farmers in order to protect that black man. Equally, if, you know, the something like one of the brutal, many brutal farm murders where young black men are raping and killing an 8-year-old or a 65-year-old lady, I would feel nothing to have to beat to death those guys by exactly the same token in order to defend those white people. It's, to me, I see no difference between something like this, as absolutely disgusting as it is. It should be juxtaposed against what's happening with the government's own figures of five murders a week of farmers and their families, kids being thrown into boiling tubs of bath water, women getting broken beer bottles shoved up their private parts. You know, just absolutely wanton, unfathomable violence that's happening on both sides. So, you know, as a white person, I don't know if I'm supposed to feel guilty, but I don't, not in the slightest, because I know what my reaction would be in that situation. I would feel as compelled to protect that black man as I would to protect a white victim of racist violence.
Interesting perspective from Tony. Let's take one more call. Janine in Cape Town.
Hello. I'd like to respond to the man who didn't want his children to watch brutality depicting what is reality for, I don't know, but thousands or millions of people in this country. Maybe he might consider that there are fathers whose children have to actually witness in real their parents being brutally treated. And which children are we protecting? The ones who watch it on a TV screen in the comfort of their safe homes, or the ones who are actually witnessing it in real? And we hear a great deal about how black South Africans haven't moved on since apartheid. Well, it appears from incidents like the recent one where a man tried to bury another man alive, and the sort of thing that's been depicted on Isidingo, and the responses from several of your callers, that a lot of white South Africans haven't moved on, are living in the past, and need a reality check.
Sure. I mean, it's an interesting view, right? And what Janine is saying, and also the previous call, also shows you, again, the danger, Tandi, of generalizations. Because you have the second last caller saying, I can view that without feeling personally like I'm indicted as a white person. And you have Janine there also talking about the complexity of trying to shield your kids from reality, that everyday realities. They're both, I think, white callers, very different to the first two that opened the conversation.
Yes, very different. And I think both callers do make some really important points. And I think dealing with the issue of violence in itself is a different conversation. And I think we also can't get confused with the uncomfortability of seeing graphic content versus seeing graphic content that that represents reality. I think both are difficult. And, you know, I think with or if we talk about, well, whether people have moved on or not, clearly we haven't moved on. And I don't think it's a case of asking to move on. We can't just move on. We have to deal with these issues and find ways of interacting and engaging. And exactly like the conversation this morning, I think it's a good start.
Carol, your final thoughts?
Eusebius, racism in our country is a complex issue. Like, I think the show has shown it that, you know, it's not nice and easy. But I think it's important that we continuously have these conversations. And it's also quite important that both blacks and whites stand up and say not in our name. And I think for us to also move on, we need to also accept that it's not going to happen overnight. We're not going to wake up and together we are on sea in one ship, we're a rainbow nation. It's not going to happen like that, you know. Our realities are different, and such situations need to be mediated, you know. And one key important thing to remember is that these incidents do happen, and unfortunately, most of them go unnoticed. The people continuously become victims. And how we deal with racism is perhaps we start fixing the realities of those that are marginalized, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not going to happen to a city girl like me.
Absolutely.
You know, but when you go to the outskirts of our country, it is a daily reality of somebody in that situation, you know, who is always constantly living in fear. We need to fix those things. And I feel like we keep on forgetting such cities, you know. The Northwest incident, unspeakable. And we seem to be forgetting it, you know. Yeah. We're making noise about a whole lot of other things, but our people are living in great pain. We need to address it.
Carol Motlala, lawyer for human rights and member of the Press Council, also Tandi Smith from Media Monitoring Africa. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.